Welcome to Horror Makes Us Happy, the podcast where we ask the question, what is it about horror that makes us happy? You know? Yeah. Your hosts are Steve Becker and myself, Chris Whitman, and you can find out more about us at our website, horrormakesushappy.com. It's a very cool website that I'm sure lots of people at Horror Hound heard about recently, because yes. Steve went to that convention, and it sounded awesome.
Yes. Lots of fun. And very tiring. Walked around for 8 hours.
Yeah, I bet. Real quick, though, before you get into more of that fun, the non-fun part, this is the disclaimer. This is a horror podcast. We talk about horror stuff, so there could be sensitive subjects such as child abuse, rape, F-bombs, murder. We may delve into dark subjects, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's all that. It's really more of a fun psychological experiment to interview people in the horror industry to find out what it is about the horror that interests them.
You just never know what's going to come up.
That's right. Anywho, with that out of the way.
Yes. What is going on? Horror Hound, obviously, just went yesterday, passed out like 300 or 400 bookmarks. I didn't even count how many I have left when I got home. I was so goddamn tired. I just took a nap.
Those conventions take it out of you, man.
It was bigger. It was a bigger one. Not quite as big as Spooky Empire in Tampa, but definitely bigger than Indianapolis was. I would also say bigger than StokerCon was, although StokerCon was slightly different. It was more of a literary crowd, whereas this was
StokerCon's more niche. It's more specifically for authors and literary.
Well, the thing about Horror Hound is it wasn't even necessarily just horror, because they're like one of the guys from Rancid, who is a punk band, was there. They had wrestlers there. There was a couple.
George Wendt was there, although he was in house. So you know that's horror.
Yes,
Norm.
So that's Norm. That's a number.
Cheers, but horror.
Exactly.
Yes.
What else have we got going on? We still have 10 or 12 people on the guest list, so we won't go through them. We had it's kind of funny. We had 4 of the last 5 guests all had to reschedule. So our buffer is really tight right now in terms of our backlog, but they all did reschedule. So they're still on the calendar. It's just rearranged. We've still got Patreon and Discord. We're doing listen parties on every Sunday, and Chris also does a drawing party where he draws his webcomic pieces. His webcomic is piecesofflesh.com, and I guess might as well throw in my book, A Guide to the Recovery Toolbox. It's got 80 different tools that I've learned through therapy and recovery and 12-step stuff. So if you're interested in that kind of thing, check that out. But today's guest is author A.C. Wise, best known for her work Wendy Darling, Hooked, and The Ghost Sequences. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I am very, very happy to be here.
Our pleasure. Happy to have you. Before we get into the meat of the interview, you want to let people know what you're currently working on?
Sure. I have 2 new novellas that are coming out this year. Grackle is coming out from Absinthe Books. That should be sometime this spring. I don't have an actual specific release date for that one yet. And the other one is Out of the Drowning Deep, which is coming out from Titan Books. Grackle is kind of, I guess, folk horror-y would probably be the best way to categorize it. And Out of the Drowning Deep is my attempt to cram as many different genres into a novella as I could. Okay. So it's a little bit of science fantasy, a little bit of science fiction, a little bit of horror, a little bit of noir, a little bit of murder mystery, and all that in less than 40,000 words. So
okay, that's an accomplishment.
Yeah, who knows whether it was successful or not, but I had fun doing it. So that is coming out from Titan September 3rd.
Cool.
Are there angels in Out of the Drowning Deep?
There are indeed. There are terrifying, biblically accurate angels.
Ooh, yeah, look at the cover art. You got wings and eyes.
Yes, that's I wanted to very much sort of evoke the Madeleine L'Angle, A Wind in the Door, kind of the cherubim, seraphim there with the wings and the eyes. And I'm really, really happy with how the cover designer sort of picked up on that vibe and, you know, evoked it without, you know, being exactly that, kind of giving that feel. So I'm very happy with the way that cover turned out.
It works.
I am amused at the, so, you know, Chris and I bring our own different things to this podcast. I'm amused that he searched that and I searched Grackle, because the word, Like I was, I know that word. And then I searched and you know, find the bird, of course. Yes, exactly. So I was like, just amused that the different ways our brains are.
Yeah. And unfortunately, I haven't seen a cover for Grackle yet, but I'm really looking forward to seeing what they come up with for that one.
Mm. They should do like a metallic sheen color fade kind of thing if they can on the cover, because Grackles have that, right? They've got that weird oil slick sheen to them.
Exactly, which would be awesome if they could do something like that.
Mm-hmm. We can hope.
They also have a very interesting call. I'm fucking tangenting already before we even get started, but real quick. My friend and I were discussing this the other day. Grackles have a call that sounds like if a computer were to synthesize a screen door squeaking. It's the weirdest thing ever. It's like a digital screen door squeak.
Yeah, they make a lot of very odd noises.
Mm-hmm.
I will have to look that up later.
They're possibly one of those birds that can kind of imitate human voices to a certain degree.
Mm.
Within that sort of like family of birds that do that.
Well, if you're into biblically accurate angels, I might refer you to our interview with Bill Oberst Jr., because that came up as a topic in that interview as well.
I will have to check that out.
Jumping into the interview portion. So I don't remember what exactly we did or did not discuss. So briefly, the gist of this is that we talk less about your work and more about your personal love of horror as a genre. And then starting off with childhood and working our way through into adulthood. But starting with childhood, what are some of your first memories of scary things?
I think one of the first things, well, I mean, always ghost stories were fascinating to me, but one of the first things that I think really, really hooked me into horror was the Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark book series, which I feel like is a touchstone for a lot of people around, well, maybe not even just, you know, my generation, but a lot of people in general. I feel like, you know, that's the thing. It's sort of the combination of like the urban legends, the ghost stories, the folk stories, the weird snippets of horror where like it doesn't even really go anywhere. It's just like a weird thing that happened. And then those gorgeous illustrations that go with it. And I think it was actually maybe like, is either second or third grade, my teacher read like one of the more humorous ones to the class, and I was like, oh my god, I have to go out and find this book. I have to go out and like see what the rest of this is all about. And it's still like those three treasury, or the treasury edition is what I have now, but those three books, I feel like, you know, I've read them over and over and over again as a kid, and those stories still are just like, you know, part of my psyche in the back of my head. They just like come up at random times, and I think about them like maybe way more often than is healthy.
They were effective.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you remember a particular?
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, you were going to say something?
Oh, I was just going to say, so I think the Herald, the Scarecrow, and this is possibly what you were going to ask, but something about, you know, which ones stuck with me the most.
Exactly.
So that one was definitely one that stuck, the, you know, Scarecrow trotting back and forth on the roof. And my neighbors just down the hill from us, not a scary looking Scarecrow, but had last fall or the fall before, kind of just like at the end of their driveway, a nice little like cheerful Scarecrow decoration. But for some reason they had a sign on it that said that it was named Harold. And I was wondering if it was a specific reference to that. And if not, I was very tempted to like just print the story out for them and like stick it in their mailbox. And like, do you know what you've done? Do you know what you've invited into your life for this thing? Cause it was like the most like cheerful, happy, like you buy it at, you know, Home Depot or whatever, Scarecrow. Mm. And yeah, I was like, why that name though?
Harold is a unique enough name for a Scarecrow that they have to have known.
I mean, I think so. But you know, then again, maybe it was just like a name that they liked. Who knows?
Yeah, Harold. It sounds good.
Yeah, sounds friendly. Not murderous.
The odds are not in that favor. I have not read those stories. So what did you like about Harold, other than maybe just the, you know, fear of the Scarecrow in general?
Well, again, the illustrations in those books are amazing. I would definitely recommend just going, Googling, you know, scary stories to tell in the dark image search. And you'll see some of those illustrations by Stephen Gemmel, I think his name is pronounced.
Okay.
Or Gemmel. And so the basic gist of the story is, you know, they're sort of like tormenting this scarecrow that then sort of comes to life and has got these people trapped in this cabin. And you just hear the scarecrow trotting back and forth on the roof. And it's just like such a creepy, effective image. Yeah, I don't know. It's like, it's an incredibly short story too, as most of the stories in these books are, like, literally just sort of snippets of horror and terrifying things happening. I feel like, you know, there's, you know, maybe 5 pages at the most. They're kind of intended for kids while also being truly horrifying, you know, like spiders bursting out of people's skin. And, you know, there's one called, I think, The Bride or something like that, where, you know, this couple is playing hide and seek with their guests on their wedding, and she gets trapped in a trunk, and basically nobody finds her until she's a skeleton several years later. So, you know, horror for kids in that, you know, I don't know. And it sticks with you. It sticks with you.
Let's see. Anything else other than scary stories to tell in the dark that remind you of that you remember from childhood?
I mean, I guess to a certain degree, fairy tales, because, you know, even the ones that I feel like that are cleaned up, there are still hints of their horror roots in there.
Oh, yeah.
I remember, you know, going to the videos back when, you know, video stores like Blockbuster and even neighborhood video stores were a thing. You know, going with my parents to rent movies and just being like fascinated by all the horror covers of the VHS that, you know, my mom was like, seriously, why though? Here's a nice like cartoon for you. I'm like, but what about this thing? She's like, no.
Right.
See, that's funny.
Like, I didn't even know something. What they were. I was just fascinated by them.
Yeah.
I want the real Cinderella.
Yeah.
Pretty look back, right?
She's like, here's some Care Bears. This is a little bit more age appropriate for you right about now. Okay.
See that? I'm telling you, Steve, that is one of the things that keeps coming up, and I keep bringing it up. That is, I think, a common thread in our search for the answer here is that horror just looks cool. It's very visually interesting, you know, and that's what draws people in the video store experience. You see those horror covers and they look cool. That's why the bad guys look cooler, their weapons look cooler, their cars look cooler. It's just it's dark and appealing, I guess. It's not the norm.
Yeah, there's something like visceral and fascinating. It's that, I guess, you know, the sort of like car accident thing where, you know, people are compelled to look even though they don't want to look, where they know it's bad and they kind of shouldn't be gaping at it. But there's that sort of fascination where you can't look away. Right. And I feel like, you know, some of those horror covers, like, you know, this is something wrong. This is something bad. This is something terrifying happening to people. And yet there's that fascination.
Yes. Did you participate in Halloween as a kid?
Halloween, yes, definitely. My mom was actually really, really good at homemaking costumes for me, which was awesome.
Did you have a favorite costume?
One year, I actually convinced her to let me go as the Joker, which I feel like she was not into, but I was super into. And okay. There's like no photo evidence of this, which I feel like was maybe a deliberate choice on her part of like, why is my child like this? But there were like some awesome costumes in general. Like when I was really little, I remember she made me like a pretty awesome princess costume. I wanted to be Spider-Man one year, and like not knowing, you know, how actual sewing and making of things work. I'm like, Mom, you can make me this. She's like, no, I can't. Like, I can sew a skirt. I can sew a shirt. I cannot sew you a full Spider-Man costume with like detail. I'm like, but why not? I don't understand.
Oh, no. It's very simple. You just, you know, you make a onesie, but also there's certain patterns where it goes this way on the arm. This part's red. This part's blue. It's very simple. Can you get it done in 8 hours?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, like Peter Parker, who was like a high school kid with no seamstress experience that we know of, managed to make it. So therefore, this should be easy.
They actually just retconned that. Peter Parker had 15 brothers in his basement. Not like people, like the sewing machines.
Oh, I feel like that was like an under-discussed superpower of his. Like, you know, they talk about the web swinging, the wall climbing, but we really don't discuss his seamstress skills.
They also didn't mention how long it took him and how many attempts he made.
Yeah.
That could have been his like 36th attempt.
Yeah. One thing I did like about the Tobey Maguire movies was like his first one was literally like, I put on a sweatshirt and a hood. And that looks like something that somebody could conceivably make, as opposed to like the other ones where it's just like, no, this is not a thing that anybody could reasonably make themselves.
So why did you want to be the Joker?
Yeah.
I was absolutely obsessed with Batman as a kid. And of course, because the villains are always more fun, I wanted to be Joker for Halloween. And also purple, one of my favorite colors. So I figure, you know, perfect purple suit, fun villain. And yeah, I somehow managed to talk my mom into it.
Did you have a least favorite costume?
Not least favorite, but it was one of those things that seemed like a better idea at the time than it actually was. My neighbor and I decided we were going to go as a two-headed monster, which is like fine for 5 minutes until you then have to like walk around the entire neighborhood, realize that you like can't actually tie your own shoes on your own when they come untied.
The practicality of the costume
comes into play. Exactly. It seemed like a good idea. I feel like it looked pretty cool. And then we were like tripping over each other the whole time, banging into each other the whole time.
You get to learn what it was like to be a conjoined twin.
Exactly. Yeah. And again, it looked cool. It wasn't like I hated the costume. It just, again, seemed like a better idea than it actually was in practicality of like, okay, we're done with this.
Now imagine trying to date in that.
Yeah. That would be a challenge.
Yes. Not to mention getting married and having kids. That's a whole other. Did you have any scary dreams as a kid or reoccurring dreams?
There's one dream that not necessarily scary, but that like kind of sticks out in my head for being weird and for like my reaction to it at the time. I remember being convinced that there were either skeletons coming up out of my floor and or like witches dancing around in a circle in my room. And I just thought it was super cool. it should have been scary, but I'm like, I want to see what they're doing. This is fun. I wonder if I can hang out with them.
And there was spoken like a true horror author.
Yeah, like green mist coming up out of my floor. And I thought it was really cool. And I wanted to like get a closer look at it. And I feel like I was pretty young at the time.
You're like little Freddy Savage in Little Monsters. Like, this is fun. This isn't scary.
Exactly.
When she mentioned the skeletons coming out of the floor, I was thinking maybe there was influenced by poltergeist. But then when she said it looked fun, I'm like, okay, maybe not.
She said floor, not pool.
Well, yes.
I feel like it was almost like, I don't know, maybe like some version of like a Disney Halloween cartoon where there were like floating skeletons or something like that. Like maybe that was what was in the back of my brain and just got mashed up with witches and green mist and things coming out of the floor. And I thought it was cool looking.
Dreams do that. They combine things.
Yes. Yeah, was there ever a time in your childhood when you were actually terrified of something in real life?
I remember when I was really little going to Disney with my parents and being terrified of the Pirates of the Caribbean ride. I was convinced that like the animatronic pirates were going to drop down on us from above for some reason.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, something, there was like one specific one, like close to the entry of the ride that was sitting on kind of like a ledge, I guess, above where the boats pass under with bare feet like swinging.
Near the end, I think, you go directly under it.
Yeah, it was either near the end or near the beginning. And I just remember like it had bare feet swinging down kind of over. So it's like not even any of like the overtly scary ones, because I feel like there were ones that were also skeletons and cages and like actual threatening pirates, but for some reason that like drunk one with the bare feet really freaked me out as a kid. I'm like, he's gonna drop into the boat, I just know it.
Do you have a foot phobia? Is it a foot thing?
It might be. I do find feet kind of creepy, actually, so maybe that's what it was.
We have another guest like that, Steve, where they're just like, I do not like feet, do never send me pictures of feet, I will kill you or something like that.
Ashley Cruel And
that's right.
And I joked that I was tempted to cut because she was
lived she's a couple like, hours. I will cut you.
Yes, she was like, I will break your nose.
Yeah, I won't have that violent a reaction, but feet. Yeah, feet are kind of weird. I don't really like them that much.
They're weird.
Maybe that's where that comes from. This is like
ugly little hand feet with hand feet. Never mind. I had something, but that's.
Let's see. Flipping that question around, was there ever a time in your childhood when you felt completely calm or safe or bliss?
Maybe being at the beach with my family and feeling just like very calm and relaxed and just enjoying the waves and reading on the beach. Yeah. I mean, I guess that's sort of the thing that comes to mind is not like one specific moment, but like those, you know, vacations and summer vacations, hanging out on the beach in Cape Cod. I feel like we're pretty peaceful.
Okay. Yeah, that works. Oh, wait, Cape Cod, is that? Yeah, it's up near the New England area, right?
Yes.
Yeah, it's like outside of Boston, basically.
Yeah.
In that case, this one comes up often in our show. Did you have any influence by any chance from Jaws as a child?
I didn't see Jaws until later in life, actually. I remember like catching just like a bit of it on TV at once, but no real influence from it as a kid. And I was never like, you know, convinced that sharks were going to get me in the water or anything like that.
Okay.
Moving into teenage years, do you remember any books or movies or stories that really jump out to you as impactful during your teenage years?
I definitely read a lot of Christopher Pike, R.L. Stein, kind of like those more like, I guess, young adult aimed horror stuff or horror books, I should say. Carolyn Cooney. I'm sure there were others whose names I'm blanking on now, but they all kind of had that like, the dripping blood font or like the jagged letter font on them. They, you know, mostly sort of had young protagonists. And actually Tor.com recently did sort of like a reread series on them. And I realized kind of looking back that despite reading a lot of those, I really remember very little about any of them. And also like realized how bad most of them were in terms of right. Like stalking is romance, murder is you know, that's how people show they care, by murdering the people
I'm that they're doing this because in. I love you.
Exactly. Exactly. And that seemed to be the plot of like a good 50% of the books that they reread and that I have like no real memory of.
Yes.
I was also
50 really, Shades of Grey scene.
Yeah. I was also really obsessed with, and this, it only lasted one season, but I absolutely loved the television show American Gothic. Mm-hmm. Don't know if anybody else remembers that, but you know, like very murdery thing, horror thing that I
recognize, you know, the title, but I never watched it. Did you, Chris?
I started watching it. I want to say, who was it? There was an older man who was one of the main protagonists in it.
Gary Cole was the main person.
Yeah. The I'm going to have you come in on Sunday.
Exactly. Like very different role from his role in Office Space. Yes. And I think that was my first exposure to him as an actor, too.
I'm glad that you said that because I'm horrible with names. So I had no idea who you were talking about until you said that.
It's longer. But no, I had the same experience. And it's funny. I actually completely forgot that when watching Office Space. I knew something about him looked familiar. Like, I've seen you before. I'm going to have to revisit American Gothic. From what I remember watching, it was good.
It was a little cheesy, but also like good fun, like does play with a lot of sort of like Southern Gothic tropes of like hidden family history and, you know, devil possession and stuff like that. And I definitely remember like talking all my friends into watching it. And I don't know whether they continued on with it, but I definitely kept watching the series. I think we had a watch party with the first episode.
Nice.
And again, I stuck with it. I don't know if any of the rest of them did, but
I mean, having to come in on the weekends is its own horror story, but that's a different conversation.
Yeah, those are things that sort of like stick out from the high school years, I guess, as like horror at the time.
You mentioned Christopher Pike. Is there one particular story that jumps out to you from his stuff?
Unfortunately, like I said, they're all kind of like a mushy blur. Like I remember reading a lot of them, but I could not tell you what the plot probably of any single one of them was.
Okay.
Other than like I feel like there was a lot of like people faking their deaths and then like they were the murderer all along and, or see people like that seemed like they'd come back from the dead, but it was like somebody else pretending to be them. But again, this stuff. Is just
it like, was old man yeah. Carruthers.
Exactly, exactly.
Very, yeah. Very appropriate. Yeah. How about R.L. Stine?
So I think it was a little too early for like his goosebump. Like I was a little too old by the time like goosebumps became a thing. But some of his like stuff that he was doing before that, I think like some of the Fear Street stuff, and then he had some stuff that was kind of like standalone stuff. But again, it's like stuff that I remember reading, but I couldn't really necessarily tell you anything about any of the individual plots of any of them. Going back to like bad memory, it's all a blur.
How about if I ask the question a different way? Because often, it's not necessarily about the detail so much as the emotional response. So what if I ask you, what was your emotional response to R.L. Stine's work?
That is a very good question. I mean, I just remember it being something that like I enjoyed reading. And I remember it wasn't R.L. Stine, but there was another, and it may have been a Carolyn Cooney trilogy, The Fog, The Fire, and The Something. It was like three weather phenomenons were the name of the three books, and I definitely remember that series was one that I feel like not necessarily like an emotional response, but I'm like, ooh, this is really good, this is really creepy. But again, I couldn't necessarily tell you anything about the plot other than I feel like there was somebody sort of like running through a series of caves at one point to try to escape whatever terrible thing was happening on the island. Okay. Like she lived in some like remote place with either like a foster family or something like that. And, you know, they turned out to be horrible people and she was trying to get away from them.
Okay.
And I feel like she was running through a series of underground caves. And like, that's an image that kind of sticks in my mind. Either that or I'm just like completely misremembering and making up a plot that never happened. But I feel like that is a thing that maybe happened in those books.
Well, I was doing some Googling while you were talking and it was Carolyn Cooney and it was The Fog, The Snow, and The Fire.
Okay, there we go. I knew it was like elements, weather phenomenon kind of thing.
Right. Now, as far as whether or not it had anything to do with caves, that I didn't pull that up, so we'll guess on that. Yeah. So we talked about American Gothic, Hidden Family History, and Devil Possession potentially of interest to you. Was there ever a time in your teenage years when you were actually terrified of something in real life?
Again, nothing is really necessarily jumping out at me. I'm sure there must have been. I know these are.
I mean,
really
that's probably a good thing. I mean,
maybe I've just like blocked it out. I don't know. Right. I mean, I definitely remember like, you know, that thing where like you're with your friends and you kind of like all kind of spook each other out. Just like, you know, you get worked up over things, either like telling scary stories or like convincing yourself that like you heard something weird or. And then, cause like part of the fun is kind of like, you know, again, like egging each other on and like, oh yeah, I definitely heard like a creepy noise over there. And like, you know, the fun is like being scared or playing up being scared.
Mm-hmm. Flipping that question around, was there ever a time in your teenage years when you felt completely calm or safe or at bliss?
I remember going to a museum exhibition with, I guess it was like a class excursion. It was at the, I'm trying to remember, it's like something, the Contemporary Museum in Montreal, which is where I grew up. I actually don't know if the museum still exists or not, but they had a room, which was, I guess, an art installation. They actually had live peacocks wandering around in the gallery and these like streamers of orange silk coming down from the ceiling. And you'd think like live peacocks wandering around would not actually be all that relaxing, but like something about the room was like very calming and relaxing. And I remember like after going through the rest of the museum exhibit, which was relatively small, my friends and I just kind of like sitting in this gallery for what felt like a really, really long time. I'm sure it couldn't have been that long, but it was just like, a very like chill, relaxing moment of just like watching these orange silk streamers coming down from the ceiling and having like peacocks wandering around in the background.
So the funniest thing about that to me is the place that I lived in Florida, there were peacocks that I don't know if they're somebody's pets that they let wander around or like they escaped or whatever.
They are not quiet.
Exactly. So when you're talking about it being calm and chill, and I'm just like,
yeah, exactly. Like the opposite of what peacocks can be like. These peacocks were like very quiet and very well behaved, which like later I went to, I guess it was like a resort hotel where they had peacocks on the ground. And I remember like being woken up at 5 a.m. sounded like somebody being murdered. I'm like, yes, oh no, that's exactly. Just a peacock screaming, but it does sound like a human person screaming as they're being killed.
Yes.
And I laugh even harder at this, just thinking about this, because as had your only experience so far been the peaceful, serene scene with the peacocks, and then all of a sudden this, like, that's what they're really like. Exactly.
Those birds. Yeah. Like, those were the two times I had been, like, closest to peacocks in real life, other than, like, you know, seeing pictures of them or, like, seeing them in the distance at a zoo or whatever. So it was like, yeah, the calm, quiet ones just wandering around a gallery, and then the ones
you just got lucky with the timing, that's all.
Yeah.
You just got lucky with the timing, that's all.
Yeah.
Five minutes later, they'd have been screaming.
Yeah, I'm amazed that, you know, the museum thought that this was a good idea to just have live screamy birds wandering around the gallery, but I guess it worked for them.
I mean, if nothing else, just the bird shit on the floor.
Yeah, I would think that would not be ideal, but what do I know?
I'm sure the janitors were
not amused. Yeah, they're like, really, really, this is your art installation. Are you, as the artist, going to come in and clean up the bird poop? Because I don't want to clean up the bird poop.
Yeah,
Steve, peacocks don't poop.
They're too pretty to poop, right?
Yeah. You know, I was going to ask which Disney you went to, but knowing that you're, I think, on this side of the country, I'm guessing it was the one in Florida.
It was the Florida one, yes.
Because Busch Gardens, also in that general vicinity, also has a lot of peacocks perusing the grounds, shall we say, although that's Tampa, and Orlando was Disney, so you probably didn't get to go to Busch Gardens.
Yeah.
They're right next to each other.
I don't think I've ever...
Only 2 hours away.
It's, yeah. Maybe? I'm not sure.
I guess moving into adulthood, what are, if you were to pick the top three most influential or impacting things related to horror in your adult years, what would those be?
Ooh, that's another really, really good question. I feel like I should have a good answer ready.
What?
Whatever comes to the top of your head. And yet, yes. I don't.
Well, that's good questions. I mean, they're the ones that pop you off and have to make you think.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I feel like there is a certain, I guess, degree of like recency bias, maybe. Like, I feel like... Right. Right now, some of the stuff that speaks most to me in horror is like the things that like A24 and Blumhouse, their movies, where I feel like they're always doing something interesting. Like even when whatever it is doesn't fully land for me or isn't like 100% successful, I feel like it's always like ambitious. And the fact that their movies tend to be a little bit lower budget maybe forces them to like, I don't know, rely, I guess, less on like special effects, or rely less on like, you know, sort of like the blockbuster tropes where like, we're going to try something weird and, you know, maybe it's going to be a success.
If only you could have seen my face. I'm guessing you're referring to the Blumhouse on that, because I was thinking A24 when you were like, their budgets are a little less. And I'm remembering Infinity Pool and I'm like, really?
Well, yeah, maybe not that one.
Yeah. But I mean, you know. Overall, they tend to be, you know, they're not, I guess, like the Scream franchise, say, where exactly. They're like, yes. You know, paying their stars millions of dollars and or like, you know, any of those sort of like ongoing horror franchises where like they've got the bigger studios behind them. They've got the budgets to spend on, you know,
locations. I was just going to say, like, if you were to categorize, you've got like indie and then A24 Blumhouse, and then like the rest of Hollywood is like up in the, you know, multi-millions.
Right. Yeah. There's like a pretty big jump there. So exactly.
I would say they're indie appearance with not indie money.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. Or Yeah, like even when they do have access to the money, sometimes I feel like they will kind of like, we're going to spend a little bit less on this and just like see what you do with it.
Mm-hmm. Well, there is something to be said about art that is made with restrictions. I mean, the restrictions sometimes force you to be creative in ways that you wouldn't have done before. Like, I can't remember who it is. I want to say James Joyce, but I'm not positive, but there's a novel that was written without the letter E, which is the most common letter
in the thing that like James Joyce would do.
Right. Yeah. Right.
I mean, E is the most common letter in the English language. So to force yourself to not use a single word that has the letter E is super restrictive in a certain way, but
I would use his name on it. Sounds more masochistic. Like why would you do that to yourself? No ease. Yeah. No, thank you.
Yeah. As you were sort of saying, that made me think of another movie that it's one of those ones like where nothing really overtly scary happens on screen, but it's incredibly, incredibly tense. And I think it's called Let's All Go to the World's Fair. And it's essentially like one actress pretty much carries the entire thing, relatively young. And for the most part, it's like her talking directly to the camera because she's doing this like quote unquote, I guess, TikTok type challenge.
Right.
Where there's like something supposed to, you know, creepy happens if you like watch this or do this.
Okay.
And yeah, it's like very effective, low budget horror where again, it's like, for the most part, one person, one camera, very limited location, no real special effects, nothing like, again, overtly happens on screen. There's a lot of sort of like suggestions of stuff happening just off camera, but it somehow manages to like hold that sense of tension, hold that sense of like something terrible is going to happen kind of throughout. And I think that's some like interesting effective horror that's made more effective by being like low budget, limited, focused kind of thing.
Yeah. One thing with low budget is you definitely benefit from a lot of use of show don't tell.
Yeah, exactly.
So what was it that was scary in that movie?
I don't know. I feel like they were doing like maybe like subtle sound tricks or even just like, I think her acting too, like, you know, gave sort of the sense of somebody being terrified or, you know, the sense that something off, like it's hard to even like describe exactly what it was between sort of like her acting, just like conveying the sense of, you know, being somebody a little bit like lonely and desperate. And then again, some of like the sort of subtle sound tricks just kind of give you the sense of like impending doom kind of hanging over this character. Yeah. It's one of those things that's sort of like hard to describe. You kind of have to see it to understand, but because it doesn't sound scary like when you describe it, because it's literally most of the time like just this girl sitting in her room making these like video recordings for the internet, which again does not sound like it should be scary. But
yeah, as you describe this, I've got it on the IMDb page just with the, you know, preview of it muted, scrolling through the shots, and I'm just thinking, this looks pleasantly discomforting.
Yeah, it's like not necessarily scary, but like uncomfortable, I guess, or uneasy maybe.
Yeah, but to the point where like it draws you in and intrigues you, and the, you know, before you know it, you've been spending a half an hour being uncomfortable and enjoying it.
Exactly. Yeah, it's definitely one of those kinds of movies.
Oh god, the way she stares into the camera, that's good.
Do they ever how can I say this? I don't want to say, do they ever give a resolution? Because that's not exactly what I mean. But like, do they ever like hone in on what it is that's making her uncomfortable? Or is it just like this open ending that you never really know?
It's a little bit open ended, but I mean, I also don't want to like spoil, but there's like things that are sort of heavily implied to the towards the end, where she kind of like leaves the room with the camera running and then kind of comes back, and you have a sense of like what probably happened, but they never actually say.
And your emotional response to whatever it is that happened would have been uncomfortable. What?
I think so. Or, you know, yeah, I feel like I'm not, again, describing it very well, but it's definitely a, like a sense of like, oh shit, something very bad happened, kind of like that moment. But again, without actually putting anything directly on screen, which I think is sometimes, you know, a hard thing to pull off, but I like when horror does that, when it manages to sort of imply things or just like, you know, give you enough to fill in. It kind of goes back to that. I want to say it's an Alfred Hitchcock quote, or at least has been like attributed to him, that the whole, like, the scariest thing is a closed door, of like not actually shoving the monster or the horror in your face, but letting the reader or the viewer kind of like bring their own,
right,
I guess maybe unease or insecurities or fears or their imagination to whatever it is, and letting them kind of fill in the blanks. Oftentimes that's more terrifying than anything you could actually put on the page or the screen.
Yeah.
And that's really kind of my favorite kind of horror, like the horror that gets under your skin and kind of like lingers with you, to me is always sort of the more psychological horror, where less is more.
Yeah.
Any scary dreams as an adult or reoccurring dreams?
I guess like the closest thing to a recurring dream, which I feel like other people have too, is that thing where like, oh, I forgot this paper was due, or like, oh, there's a, you know, even having been out of school for many, 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 many years now, I do still occasionally have those like panic dreams of like, oh shit, I forgot to do my homework. Oh shit, I can't find my class. I don't know how my locker combination, so I can't get any of my books out, and I don't know how to read my schedule.
Yeah.
So I guess maybe like more recurring stress dreams than actual like scary dreams.
that tracks with adulthood.
Yeah.
And it's always like dumb things too. Like, I don't know.
I forgot to put dishwasher detergent in the dishwasher before starting it. Oh my God, the world is over.
The world is going to end.
Right. So the next question is not just related to horror, could be any genre and over your entire life, not any particular time, but what movie would you say you have watched more times than any other?
Ooh, it would probably either be the 1989 Batman or Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
Why those? Because those have obviously not come up in the call before.
I think they both kind of hit me like just at the right age. Like, you know how there's like certain things you encounter them at a certain age and you just like imprint on them and they end up like being part of your psyche.
Mm-hmm.
I think those two movies were like both that for me. And I think I saw Who Framed Roger Rabbit at least 3 times in the theater and have like watched it over and over and over and again since then. It's a movie that I feel like that shouldn't work and somehow does. Like, Warner and Disney should not cooperate with each other to like the level of making that work. It shouldn't be like hard boiled noir mashed up with cartoons, shouldn't work. And yet it does.
It possibly may never happen again.
Yeah. It never will.
There have been attempts. Cool world.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
So yeah. What was its impact on your psyche?
I think it kind of like got me fascinated with like noir and the hard-boiled detective genre. Like, I'd never, you know, really encountered anything of that up until then. And obviously I know it's like not, you know, but it has a lot of those tropes and a lot of that kind of thing. So kind of got me interested in that. Jessica Rabbit is just perfect. I love everything about her.
No arguments there.
And, you know, I feel like there's a lot of things that the movie was doing that like I probably didn't recognize at the time, but can like look back on and appreciate and say that it was ahead of its time, not even just in like the blending of the animation and but the fact that like Jessica Rabbit is actually like a relatively feminist character. She's unapologetic about her sexuality. She won't let anybody else put any labels on her. She rescues Roger. She marries for love. She, the whole, I'm not bad, I'm just drawn that way. It's like, you can see me however you want, but I know who I am and I'm not going to apologize for that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the fact that it is kind of like dealing with like trauma and kind of like some heavy themes, but also it's a movie for kids.
Right.
Yeah.
What about Batman?
Like I, you know, read a few comics kind of here and there, but that was probably my first, like, I guess, real, like, introduction to like superhero and comic books and stuff like that. And again, I feel like it just hit me at the right time of like, you know, being dark and moody and, yeah, I don't know. It just kind of like struck me right as like, okay, yes, I love this. I love the whole, like, my response to my parents being murdered is to dress up like a bat and hunt down criminals. This makes perfect sense.
Yeah, right.
This is a normal, healthy response to trauma in your childhood. I guess it was like, again, my first sort of like real introduction to superhero stuff and kind of got me into comics and led to interest in other superheroes and kind of became, you know, a lifelong fandom, I guess.
Okay. Yeah. That inspired Halloween costumes. And now also answers a question I was going to ask earlier, which would be,
sorry, dog. Stop. There's nothing there. No. All right. Hang on a second. I'm going to try to kick her out of the room. Dog, stop.
Wow.
That last little bit.
And another thing.
Yeah.
All right. Well, she was breaking through the door, but maybe it's a little bit muffled now. I don't know. She's convinced that how dare somebody is delivering a package to our house. That clearly means we are under attack. The world is going to end because Amazon delivery.
Yes. I'm saving your life, goddammit.
Yes, I'm saving you from the thing you ordered.
Yes.
Well, she's just stopped for the moment. Hopefully she'll,
I think we're good.
Yes. Well, let's see. We were talking about Who Framed Roger Rabbit and then Batman, and both were dark and moody. Yep. And I think the next question I was going to ask is, what is your favorite movie? Again, not just horror, but any genre and over your entire lifetime. And it might be either Batman or Who Framed Roger Rabbit, but we asked them as two separate questions because it could be a different answer.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely, oh my God, I'm really sorry about her. I mean, I feel Framed Roger Rabbit might be like my all-time go-to, like I could just watch it over and over again and still enjoy it.
Okay.
I definitely have, you know, like, obviously other movies that I've enjoyed, other movies that I go back to over time. Sometimes there's like the recency bias of like, oh, I just, you know, I saw this recently and I love it. It's really hard to point to like one thing that's like an all-time favorite. So I'm just going to fall back on Who Framed Roger Rabbit. I'm going to go with that.
I'm just laughing at her punctuating. Like she was barking right in between your words. So it was like this perfect counterbalance like between.
Yeah.
word bark.
Yeah. She has things to contribute to the podcast.
Yes.
She's being courteous too. She's waiting until each word is finished, then barking.
Yeah.
She's emphasizing your words. Yes.
I agree.
Yes. Do you see any common threads about what kinds of horror you like? Cannibalism, occult, metaphysical, supernatural, psychological?
I think definitely psychological is what I'm most drawn to. And kind of as I was saying before, like horror where there's ambiguity, where there's room for either the reader or viewer to kind of bring their own interpretation, to kind of let their imagination fill in, like, what is the scariest part about this? I definitely like things that are kind of like unsettling, where you can't point to exactly what is scary or wrong about it, just that like feeling of something being off.
Your dog is doing a very good job of filling in the ambiguity.
Yeah. She has her own opinions.
I don't know what it is, but I don't like it.
Yeah. Horror is package delivery, is deer, is like a branch maybe outside. I don't know. I mean, cannibalism is actually kind of like a fun trope now that you mention it. I'm currently watching Yellow Jackets. Yes. Fan of the Hannibal television series. Mm-hmm. You know.
So cannibalism has not come up on the call yet until now. What is it that you enjoy about that?
I love that that's a question. what I enjoy I push about for it. Cannibalism.
It's my thing. It's my thing.
Right?
Now, I do think it's just like kind of an interesting trope, or like you can do kind of interesting things with it because there are sort of, you know, ties back to various like traditions and you know, mythologies and religions and, you know, kind of not every religion, but so many have kind of an idea of like consumption of something else as being either like, you know, you sort of take on an aspect of that. Like when you think of like transubstantiation and, in you know, drinking the blood of Christ and whatever, or like the idea of, you know, eating your enemy's heart gives you their strength. So it's like, there's kind of a sacred ritual aspect to it, while it's also being something like deeply taboo of like the last line to cross that proves that you no longer have your humanity. So there's kind of that like interesting push and pull there.
Okay. So in a couple of minutes, we'll get to a point where we'll maybe talk about what common themes are coming up. But before we do that, maybe one or two other questions just to cover any ground that we've missed. Basically, one question being, is there anything that you thought of earlier in the call that you didn't get to say? Maybe like you thought of something and then the conversation took a left turn and you didn't get to say. Talking to you, not the dog.
Yeah, she has things to contribute, but yes. No, I feel like we pretty well you know, covered most things, or like got to say most things. There's nothing that jumps to mind of like, oh, I wanted to get back to that and didn't get a chance. So
okay, so I guess the summaries that I'm looking at, there's a couple different things. It's kind of like sometimes in other conversations we talk about like a double major if you're in college. And for you, it seems like there's I would summarize them as fun and tension. And that relates to the unknown, you know, talked about being trapped in a cabin with the scarecrow trotting on the roof, you know, the pirate that was going to drop on you in Pirates of the Caribbean. It was that tension of, is it going to happen? The let's all go to the World's Fair. It's what happened off camera. We've talked about psychological ambiguity, this feeling of being trapped either via a hidden family history or devil possession or running through these caves and you don't know what's there. And then there's also like the joy of being completely separate from that, you know, beach vacations with family and, you know, this art installation with the peacocks, even though the peacocks are being very nice in that particular moment, you know, the vacations and enjoying the scenery. And I think, you know, there's other things that you've mentioned, like being dark and moody, like with Batman and the cannibalism, stuff like that. I think that maybe falls under the fun intention that I mentioned, unless you have something to say that's different that, you know, pulls that as a separate thing, or if you think there's something that I've missed that we haven't talked about yet, or additional context that you would like to add.
I think that's like a pretty good summation and good in terms of like recurring themes and stuff like that. So yeah, I think you got it.
So focusing then on, I would guess maybe the fun intention, if we were to focus on that, the next question is, why horror? Because couldn't you focus on that in any other genre? Or is there a reason maybe that you think that you like those things in particular as opposed to anything else in horror?
I mean, I think there is sort of like, you know, maybe like a cathartic release that comes with after like sort of the buildup of the tension. And just like, as you were asking the question, I was kind of thinking like the fun tension made me think of like sort of roller coasters, like almost the, you know, the scariest part is like the buildup before the big drop. And then the rest of it is just kind of fun. Mm-hmm. So there is like, you know, a certain, I guess, maybe like rush that comes with the like, oh, I survived that, like the tense buildup. And like, now I know what the horror is, or now I know what's going to happen. And I can just kind of like there's that sort of like release of like, I've been holding myself tense, waiting for this moment, and now this moment has come, and now it's kind of like almost the adrenaline rush afterwards.
A wash.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, horror kind of does that well in a way where there is almost like a thrill in the, I guess, you know, yeah, like getting your blood pumping or whatever the case may be.
Well, and so the other question there is why horror as opposed to other genres? Because, for example, adventure, action adventure has build up and release. Even rom-coms in a way have a different sense of tension and release. What is it about horror that speaks to you?
Yeah. That's a really good question, because like part of it was, I was going to say like the unknown, but then you could say like, you know, space exploration is that, or I don't know. There's just something that's always been appealing to me in horror and ghost stories. And maybe it even is sort of like the atmosphere, the moodiness of it, that's kind of different from the atmosphere in other genres, the, you know, crumbling mansions, the remote countryside, the isolation. Yeah, it, I guess maybe it's sort of like a combination of things, which again, I feel like you could technically apply many of these things to any other genre, but horror's just always been kind of the one that draws me and speaks to me. And
it's your aesthetic.
Not sure if I can define, aesthetic, it's my jam. I'm not sure if I can define specifically why, but just all of the sort of like the tropes and trappings that go with it are kind of appealing.
Okay. Well, I think we got a pretty good summary for you. And like you said, it's this thing, and it does this particular trapping for you, that you like the aesthetics of this thing. And that's just what speaks to you. Mm-hmm. Before we wrap up, I guess I could briefly say, so we'll put together a bio for you, put together a bio page on our website for you. We'll ask for, you know, whatever bio you want there, whatever links. We'll ask for some pictures that we'll use for promotional materials and stuff like that. So anybody who wants more information on you and what you're doing can check out the bio page on our page or on our website and connect to you that way. And then if you want to give another shout out quickly to what you're currently working on, I think you had mentioned Grackle and Out of the Drowning Deep.
Yep. Those are the next two upcoming things. And then I'm currently working on a new novel, but that's still in sort of the editing phase. So there's nothing really definitive to say there yet. A couple short stories coming out in anthologies later this year. I think it's Northern Frights from Undertow Books. And then
I like the name.
Yeah.
Is that a Northern Lights like the phenomenon or right. The weed reference?
So I think it's actually like referencing another classic horror anthology, I think was the idea behind it. But
Wuthering Heights?
Possibly. I think it's like actually like drawing on a lot of different things.
Okay.
As good things do.
Yeah, I think it's like all Canadian authors. I think it should be a cool anthology. And yeah, that's kind of what I have going on right now.
Okay.
And you mentioned Grackle was folk horror, right?
Yeah, like kind of folk horror-y, ghost story-y. Again, a little bit of like a mashup of different things.
Cool. Well, we appreciate your time very much. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me. This was a lot of fun.
Our pleasure, and thank you to anybody out there listening. If you would like to come join us on horrormakesushappy.com, we've got a link to our Discord server and Twitch and all kinds of different stuff. You can become a Patreon subscriber. You can see the episodes that we have linked to for other guests that we have interviewed. And if nothing else, tell a friend.